We were living at La Vida Mission in New Mexico, which is a Adventist ministry to Navajo Indians. It's a boarding school. And I had this great idea. I was the development director. This is 1993. I was the development director, and I wanted to get ADRA to send people to us, and we could get them to work in the community. And here's the thing. I knew that ADRA sent people overseas. I knew that more than half the time, those people crashed and burned. Incredible damage to families, incredible damage to self-image, incredible damage to people's relationship with Christ, because those people just weren't ready to work in a cross-cultural environment with the relatively modest training that they were getting from ADRA. And there was this huge financial cost. And I went and I told ADRA, look, guys, you send them to us. We're 60 miles from a post office out here. We're on the Navajo reservation. We've got community projects. These people will be reaching out to the community. They'll be beginning to do the kind of work that they'll do with ADRA, except it's not going to cost you anything. You don't even need to get a passport to bring them here. And we'll tell you who we think will wash out. We'll tell you who's just not making it here. And this will be a soft test, and it won't cost you much, and it'll save marriages, it'll save kids, it'll save you money. It made so much sense. And so, of course, it didn't happen. Turns I didn't know it. I was trying to push this, and Andrews University was starting up their Missions Institute. And you can't compete. Little Levita's not going to compete. We had everything that Andrews didn't have, but Andrews had Andrews. And so that didn't work. And we went back and forth for several months, and they finally said, look, Scott, brilliant idea, bad timing, not going to happen, but what are you doing for the next 7 years? I said, ooh. Because I had always, I had wanted to go with ADRA, really wanted to go, when we were living in Loma Linda, or actually, more accurate, we were living in Running Springs, about 6,000 feet in the mountains above Loma Linda, and a beautiful little house. And my wife did not want to go. She didn't have the adventurous spirit. She was raised in New England, and she wanted a house and a white picket fence, and, that's it. That's all she wanted. And I was so excited. I really wanted, I wanted to go for the wrong reasons, I think. I wanted the adventure, I wanted to leave Southern California behind. I wanted to go all over the world, and wow, this will be great. And I was writing to ADRA offices all over the world. This was before the internet. And effectively before the internet anyway. And I was getting some bites. I was talking to an ADRA office in Africa, and it was looking really good. And the most inconvenient thing happened. My wife went and got pregnant. And so, I know, women, right? Go figure. Man. It's like, did you plan that? So anyway, so I said, fine, we'll have the kid, we'll give him his shots, and off we go. Well, we had the kid. He had Down syndrome, and he needed open-heart surgery. Well, my wife was a nurse at Loma Linda University Medical Center. The university paid for 99.5% of all costs. We've only paid like $2,000. That shows you how much it cost. Dr. Leonard Bailey and Dr. Rizouk did the open-heart surgery. The best surgeons, period. She got to choose the surgical team. It was, if this is going to happen, it was the place to happen. And because of, now, Dr. Fish, you might understand all this. I didn't. There's more than one doctor. There's other doctors here. But because he had a hole in his heart and because he had trouble breathing, it was a huge advantage that we lived at 6,000 feet. I don't understand that. But the Lord worked that out as well, too. Well, we weren't going to Africa, that's for sure. And so we went to La Vida Mission. And this thing happened with ADRA. And I said to my wife, and they said, Scott, we want you to go to Bhutan. And of course I said, well, where's Bhutan? Well, it turns out it's this little hermit kingdom, a theocracy, Buddhist theocracy, north of India and on in the Himalayas. Amazing country. Oh, would I love to go there. Anyway, they said, we want to send you to Bhutan. And I was so excited. That fell through, but I kept talking to ADRA, and they said, they came up with some ideas, but by this time, my wife and I had a more realistic sense. They wanted to send me to Africa, and I said, look, guys, my wife there's this strange thing that she does. She doesn't really sweat. She just kind of collapses. She can't live any place that's really hot and humid. And Adra said, Scott, that's the developing world. We don't work in places that aren't hot and humid, you know. Well, maybe Bhutan, but we don't work in places. And I said, well, guys. So they came back to me a couple months later and they said, Scott, we'd like you to work in Mongolia. It's not hot and humid. It's the coldest capital city in the world. It's appalling. It's a nightmare. They didn't add that, but I found out later. And I said, oh boy, and I started recruiting the wife, my precious wife, Dee. And the response was somewhat negative, as in dishes flying across the room negative. It was negative. She never wanted to go places, and I'm saying, come on, let's, you know, come on. And I mean, she loves me, she doesn't want to see me held back, you know, and she's torn, but she doesn't want to go to some foreign country, and we've got, by this time, 2 kids. We've got our oldest son, Christopher, who's now a physician, a resident physician. We had Nathan with Down syndrome, and so she's saying, no, I mean, how would we can't. We can't go someplace. Tell me about Mongolia. And I told her a little about Mongolia. And she said, really? He's post-surgical. He's got a hole. He had a hole in his heart. He's got all these medications. You know, that's not going to happen. And I'm like, man. And the next day, she comes to me and gives me a big kiss. And she says, sweetheart, I've really prayed this over. And here's the deal. I have laid out a fleece with God. And if God delivers on that fleece, we're going to go. And if God doesn't, we're not going to go. And that's how it is. And I said, oh, okay, what was the fleece? Because I wanted to pour water on it, you know? And she said, no, I'm not going to tell you. Well, about 2 weeks later, I was in my office, and I went home for lunch, whatever. Anyway, I went to the house there at La Vida Mission for lunch, and my wife was bawling, just bawling. What's wrong? And she couldn't really get the words out for a while. Well, her fleece had been that the doctor, without her asking, has to check up Nathan and say he's off his meds. He doesn't need his meds anymore. Because she knew we couldn't have the kid on meds and needing medical care really frequently in Mongolia. So that was number one. Number two, that the reason he's off meds is that suddenly all his lab values come back normal. So the lab values fundamentally had to change. Number three, the big one, the silver tuna, the ticket to not Mongolia, was that this 2-year-old Down syndrome kid would diaper train himself. Because that would be 5 years ahead of schedule for Down syndrome kids, and it never happens, and there's no diapers. No, seriously, there's no diapers in Mongolia. There's no diapers. There's no diapers. So how can I put that? And all three of those things happened. And it's amazing that we went to La Vida Mission because it was cold there. It was below zero. For the first time in my life, I saw temperatures below zero, and it was just appallingly, stunningly cold. But also, if you take a Mongolian and you put a Stetson on them, you have a Navajo. And I didn't know it, but the Lord was training us. He was getting us ready. He was desensitizing us. We would enter the most dysfunctional culture that I could ever imagine. We would enter just people that were at each other's throats. We would enter people a country of people that were absolutely desperate. We would enter a country where if you are drunk and you are in the gutter, you are highly admired. Because in Mongolia, the vodka came from vouchers, and there weren't many vouchers. For you to get that drunk, you had to have a social network and influence sufficient to get that much alcohol. You had to be a person of great accomplishment to get that drunk. Yeah, that's what we were entering. We also were entering a society where if you can get something through deception, you're really admired. You didn't have to work for that. You're so smart. That was the smoothest lie. That was Mongolia. And it had been exacerbated through 75 years of Russian rule, basically, and communism and atheism, all combined. The whole thing was a complete mess. So we went to Mongolia, and there's 12,000 miles of heel marks as I dragged D to Mongolia. But we went to Mongolia, and it's very interesting what happened there. It took me years and years and years to get the full story. And even then, it came very obliquely because my good friends at ADRA, there's just some things they didn't want to admit. At Adventist Frontier Missions, if you know who they are, fantastic organization, they had sent two workers to Mongolia to study Mongolian and be stealth missionaries. And they got there in 1992, before the collapse of the country, but during the collapse of the country, the Mongolians decided they hated the Russians. The missionaries were blonde. They looked like Russians. The Mongolians decided that the Russians weren't allowed in the bread lines, and the missionaries literally starved. These Adventists that were over there, they had the hardest time. They suffered so much. They were still there. Brad and Kathy Jolly, he had to leave the country because of stomach cancer, and he passed on while we were there. It was very sad. But they pioneered, and they had the first fruit, a young woman named Davahu, who became the first baptized Adventist. And she was baptized by the president of the Adventist Church, Elder Falkenberg. And so they had this swimming pool. They got this wonderful ceremony, just a few people there, the first Adventist. It was wonderful. While Elder Falkenberg was there, he met with the president of the country. And the president and Elder Falkenberg said, "How can we help you?" Well, Mongolians know nothing of churches or knew nothing of churches. And they said, "Well, churches, how can you help us? We could use an organ." Because church, you got to have an organ. That's how much they knew. And Elder Falkenberg said, "I'll tell you what. We're going to send you ADRA. We're going to send ADRA. And ADRA is a helping organization. And, you know, your country really needs help. And you've got a lot of problems. Collapse of your country. You need ADRA." So Elder Falkenberg goes back, the president of the church, knocks on ADRA's door. "I told the president of Mongolia that you're going to start an office in Mongolia. Well, there's a little problem here. ADRA worked in 121 countries, which was way too many. And they had decided a few months before that they were going to cut that down to 90 countries, that it was going to be so incredibly painful, but they were going to trim off one-fourth of the countries they worked in. This meant severing relationships. This meant laying off staff. This meant entirely, just a hugely painful reorganization. This was terrible. And now there's one more. Really, Mr. President? Really?" And so ADRA, without saying, "Absolutely not," they said, "Okay, when we start a country, the church gives us however many, $100,000. Well, they give us we got a budget. They give us money. We get money from Elder Falkenberg when we start a country. But you know what? We're not going to spend a dime of our own budget on that. We're going to start this. This is Elder Falkenberg's project. He's going to have to keep it going. So never mind him. Now all we need is some sucker to send to Mongolia. I don't want to send anyone there who's good. I wouldn't send my dog. It's really cool. Oh, Scott. He wants a cold play. Hey, Scott." Well, that's what happened. And so I go to Mongolia, and everything is in disarray. The country has fallen apart. The schools really aren't functioning. They don't have any money. They can't feed the kids lunch. They can't get any new books. The kids are required to be in uniform, but nobody can afford uniforms. There's no pencils. I mean, you know, same thing in the hospital. The syringes are used. Yeah. There are no IVs. They didn't have modern medicine to begin with. My wife, when she was there, we went there, and she began to volunteer in an infant orphanage. I mean, she's a pediatric nurse. Oh, and by the way, as we were leaving the country, she goes and gets pregnant again. So she's at this pediatric orphanage. She's taking care of these young kids, and she's pregnant. And astonishingly, there's another Westerner there. We hardly saw any other Westerners. And the Westerner is pregnant. And these two Western women are talking to each other, and they're kind of joyful. You're in Mongolia. You're pregnant. You were having similar experiences. Ah. And three doctors rushed over and grabbed them and separated them forcefully. And through the interpreter, they said, "Stupid Westerners, don't you know that when pregnant women stand so close, the babies switch?" No, those are fully accredited Soviet-trained doctors. Then that was medicine in Mongolia. That's how it was. It's not quite like that now, but that was medicine, you know? Wow. And so anyway, they needed so much help in every capacity, but it was the street kids that were breaking my heart. And it was the street kids who would beg, and the government had told me, "I will throw you out." And Adra told me, "Build an organization." And I'm going like this. I'm halting between the two, and I'm slipping the kids something. But there's thousands of them, and a little something. You know, I need to help these street kids. And I was halting between the two, and then I had this dream, where a strange dream, but you know. Anyway, in the dream, this street kid was tugging at me and tugging at me, tugging me, and I got mad at the kid, and I turned around and there was my son, Nathan, my most vulnerable child with Down syndrome, as a street children, and I'm looking at him in shock, and he turns to the face of Christ. Well, that's a pretty clear lesson. And so I woke up and I said, "Okay, that's it. We're just, you know, I don't care if they throw me out of the country. I cannot morally not help these street kids who were beat upon by policemen. They were preyed upon by others. It was horrible, and I had to do it." And so we started handing out a little bit, and then our shipping container arrived, finally, after months. And what had happened was we were very modest. We didn't have many goods. And of this 20, it wasn't big, it was just a 20-foot shipping container, but we only filled up a few feet of that shipping container. And so Adra had they'd filled up the rest. And two things had happened. An Adventist health food store had gone out of business, and they donated their entire stock. We got all this Vegemite, these vegetarians in Mongolia, where there are no vegetables. There's only, seriously, you go to the market, and there's this lamb carcass, a sheep carcass, and you say, "I want 2 kilos," and they take a hatchet, and they hack away, and anyway, that's how you buy your food, and it's like, oh. I mean, you know, if you want to eat meat, that's fine, but I was a lifelong vegetarian, and that's a shocking way to start. It really is. And mutton, really? Oh. Anyway, so here was all of this amazing food and dried vegetables and all this stuff, and just like, oh, we can eat. And then, in addition to that, they filled up the rest of the space with children's winter clothing, children's shoes, and power bars. So we had all of this amazing stuff. We can, you know, we could hand out any of this stuff. And how am I going to do this? I'm thinking, how am I going to do this? How am I going to hand it out? How am I going to help these kids without endangering my organization? There's got to be a way. And then I thought, Julian. Now, Julian was a student missionary who was this really charismatic guy. I mean, he made friends with everybody. He was a student missionary working for the AFM couple, Brad and Kathy Jolly. And Julian was just amazing. And he had come to Mongolia as a student missionary. He's a relatively new Adventist. It was amazing that they sent him. But he was just, the kids, the young Mongolians, they would follow him around like he was the Pied Piper. And I'm thinking to myself, this is great. I can have Julian do this. And it's arm's distance, and he can show the Mongolians, you know, what it's like to help others, and this'll all be good. This works. This totally works. And so I told the idea to Julian, and he took to it. He took to it like a duck to water. I mean, yeah, and he had all these great ideas, and I have never rejoiced so much about seeing a power bar wrapper on the ground as I did when I started seeing power bar wrappers around Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. Oh, wow. But there were a few things I didn't know. I didn't know that Julian was not his real name. I didn't know that he was a criminal fleeing from the FBI and that he had gone to Mongolia because there was no extradition treaty. I didn't know that he had become an Adventist in only 2 months because he needed to be an Adventist because he'd found out about AFM and that was his ticket to Mongolia. I didn't know that it was all a lie, but the FBI did. And the FBI had tracked him to Mongolia, where there was no extradition treaty. Mongolia, for the entire time that they were closely allied with the Soviet Union, had had nothing to do with America. We were the enemy. The first instance of bilateral cooperation between the government of Mongolia and the government of the United States is the identification and arrest of this guy. Tristan was his name. So he was arrested. And the news came out later that day, as a matter of fact. The Adventist Church is bringing hardened criminals to Mongolia to turn our women into prostitutes and our men into drug dealers, and ADRA is laundering the money. I and my little family had been thrown into the deep end. No, we had dove into the deep end willingly, and thank you, ADRA. They helped us. But we dove into the deep end of this cauldron that we didn't know was a cauldron, and I was so desperate to see ADRA take root, and I was so desperate to see the Adventist Church grow. And now the Adventist Church, there was no history of journalism in Mongolia, but as the government collapsed, anyone with a mimeograph was printing a newspaper. And to sell newspapers, there were these incredibly sensational claims. And this was a story they could run with, and it was everywhere. It was on state television. Oh, and Mongolia, the one thing that kept working was the propaganda machine. It was on state television. It was on state radio. The nomads, 1,000 miles out in the middle of nowhere, heard this story on their little crank radios. The whole country knew about this story. I had one employee, an atheist. What else would you find in Mongolia? His name is Mukhjargal. Nice guy, very intelligent guy, spoke English that he learned in Russia, so he had this really interesting accent. I talked with them, and then I walked back to the office. You know, it's like, okay, that's not how it goes, but I know what you're saying. Anyway, so Mukhjargal, who was a journalist, but a journalist trained in Mongolia, where you just reprint what the government says, a very intelligent young man, and he comes to me in a panic. He tells me what's going on, and he says, Scott, I gotta go. I work for you. They're coming for you. I gotta get out of here with my family because they will send you away, but they will arrest me. I have to leave. I didn't speak any Mongolian. I still speak very little. I was so bad at language. Anyway, I was panicked. There was this crisis going on. Mukhjargal's going to leave. He knows the government. He knows how to get things done. He's my only interpreter. He's the only link I have. After that, it's all sign language. You know, I got no clue. I'm begging him, Mukhjargal, please stay. Please stay. I can't function without you. I said, Mukhjargal, if you stay, you will see the Lord. You'll see God work this out. I guess that wasn't a winning argument for him, being an atheist. But I guess I was pathetic enough that he finally decided, fine, you're my responsibility. I never should have taken this job. What am I doing working for an American? He sent his family out of the city, and he stayed. The next 48 hours was just such high stress, astonishing, amazing. But here's what happened. I sat down that evening about 7 o'clock, and I was 12 time zones away from the headquarters in Silver Springs, Maryland. So 7 p.m. in my house was 7 a.m. in Washington, D.C. And I sat down and I wrote out a one-page fax, just laying out what had happened and being as clear as possible. This is what's going on. And I explained how everything had come crumbling down on my head. And I sent it. We tried not to send anything more than one page because telephone rates to the U.S. were $9 a minute. And there was no internet, so it was all fax back then, back in the day. Half hour later, I got a fax back from the president of the Adventist Church saying, okay, Scott, we are on worldwide prayer alert. Sorry, every time. So we're on worldwide prayer alert. Adventists around the world are praying for you. We're praying for you. This is serious stuff. We're taking it seriously. Here's what we've done. We've wired you $50,000 to start working in ADRA, to start working in Mongolia. We want you to activate the office and go do what you're supposed to do. Now, I left a part out. That's not as exciting because, foolishly, in my great story, I left a part out that they had never sent me a penny to do anything with. I would send them facts. Look at the children. Look at the schools. Look at the health clinics. And they would send back to me and say, how's your fundraising going? The Mongolian government was getting really frustrated with me because ADRA wasn't investing. We weren't being ADRA. But because of this crisis that was precipitated by a criminal in the FBI, ADRA sends me $50,000. We immediately went to work. We held the government off. We convinced them that this wasn't our doing, that this kid, you know, I mean, he, you know, we... And somehow AFM survived the whole thing, and they weren't thrown out of the country. And ADRA became a real, actual operation. We worked with the street kids. We worked with the schools. We worked with clinics. We were very, very, very active. 2 months after the crisis with that young man, it was Mongolian New Year. Now, Mongolian New Year falls on different days because it's the lunar calendar, but it is the biggest holiday of the Mongolian year, and any Westerner who can gets out of the country because it's all alcohol and it's horrible. You do not want to be in the country during their Tsagansar, their white New Year. And it happens during a pretty cold time of the year, too. But one of the things that happens on Mongolian New Year is the president addresses the country and speaks as the father of the nation, and he has this long address. And it's very anticipated. It's quite a tradition. Well, on New Year's Eve, Monk Jargal, very intelligent young man, had arranged it so that we would go out to the only elder orphanage, the only nursing home in the country. Because in Mongolia, if you have family, it's unthinkable that in your old age you would not be living with them. I mean, that's just unthinkable. So there was one nursing home, and that was for elderly people who didn't have family. And there were about 50 people out there. And it was about 20 below. They had run out of coal. They didn't have adequate food. They didn't have adequate clothing. It was horrible. And we showed up on New Year's Eve, the time of the year when Mongolians honor the elderly, and we brought them coal, and we brought them clothing, and we brought them food. And Monk Jargal had been very clever. We also brought along a cameraman for state television. And I didn't think of that. He did. And so the cameraman is doing the news report. And that night, the entire nation tunes in on radio and on television for the address of the president. And in the 5 minutes before the address of the president is the report on what ADRA did that day. We went from the very bottom of the heap. Satan made his best play. But God overruled the politics in ADRA, which, hey, Adventist Church has some politics. The politics in ADRA, the barriers at the government, the whole money thing, he wiped it all away in one movement. And the president started his address by saying, I just want to take a moment to thank ADRA and the other organizations like them for what they're doing in Mongolia. They truly are helping us, and we truly need to be their friends. Today, some 20-some-odd years later, the church that started with one member has more than 6,000, and it is the largest Protestant denomination, and it is growing at an incredible pace. God is doing amazing things in Mongolia. And Mrs. Fish, you're going there. My good friends from the Cedro Woolley Church who have come to hear this. You're going there when? April. Well, you know, maybe if you need anything to take with you, or if you need any mission help, you know, and you just like hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, maybe you should make a request of the Kirkland Church. But and you're going there with Fountain View Academy? Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm jealous. I'm jealous, though I'll tell you, June is much better than April. It's still going to be horribly cold. Monk Jargal became the first Mongolian to graduate from seminary at Andrews University. He is an Adventist pastor today, an amazing, very wise man who continues to proclaim God. God used the most amazing things to turn that situation around. And I have another good story that I'll tell you if I ever come back, but my voice is giving out, so that's it for today. But in our lives, the Lord is also lining it up so that when there is that moment of crisis, He brings things together to solve a multitude of problems in ways that we would never expect. A fleeing criminal, the FBI, Adventist politics, these things don't go together unless you're God. Anyway, thank you.